Israel, Amrim Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Message to the World, was written by Mark Siegel and stars Joan Crawford and Francho Tone.
In the book of Nehemiah, there is a description of the first public reading of the Bible. Then did Ezra, the expounder, bring forward the law, and he read therein, in the book, in the law of God, distinctly and exhibiting the sense, so that the people understood what was read. This is the story of a man of our times who, like Ezra, understood that the future of the world rests on the ability of men to communicate the truth, distinctly, exhibiting the sense, so that the people may understand. Is Mrs. Spingold at home? I know she hasn't been seeing anyone since Mr. Spingold. But could you ask her, please? It's quite important to me, and I think to her.
You wish to see me, young man?
Yes, about Mr. Spingold. I do appreciate this. Perhaps it's an intrusion at a time like this, but I feel I have something to share with you, which might help you now.
If it's about Nate, I'm interested. Won't you please come in and sit down?
Thank you. I met your husband only once, and that was 15 years ago. Just once, and I never forgot him. That was how he was. But you know better than anyone how he was. It was in 1945. I was a young writer just out of the Air Force, and I had an idea for a movie. But someone told me that even if you were young and unknown, perhaps especially if you were young and unknown, you could count on being heard by one man in the industry. Nate Spingold, the vice president of Columbia Pictures. Looking back, Mrs. Spingold, it doesn't seem to me it was a very good idea I took to your husband. But I'm glad I had it. It let me meet him. And it brought me a minute of conversation. A minute I won't forget.
Mr. Spingold, I don't know how to thank you.
For what?
For taking all this time.
I've really turned your idea down.
Somehow it doesn't seem to matter. You've turned my vision up.
Good. I'm grateful.
You're grateful?
Of course. This industry, it needs people who think. People who try to strike out in new directions. I think you've got something to offer.
That's very kind of you, sir.
Not at all. Don't take it as too much of a personal compliment. Almost everyone's got something to offer. What I mean is that most people have something to say. But the trick, the real trick, is finding a way to get your message to the world. You just keep trying, son. You'll find a way.
That's why I've come to you, Mrs. Spingold. I'm hoping that's what you'll do. Find the way.
The way to what?
The way to get Mr. Spingold's message and mission to the world.
During my life, I've known a great many important and successful people. I think there are two kinds. Those who try to put away their beginnings, and those who, like Nate Spingold, never forgot the early days of struggle. If his door swung wide open to young people, perhaps it was because my husband insisted on remembering always a young man who edged his way into the city room of the Chicago Examiner in 1903. The man on the city desk was Jack Lake, as colorful a newspaper man as this century has produced. They used to say in Chicago that Jack Lake had a big heart, but so did the man-eating shark.
Mr. Lake, my name's Nate Spingold.
That's very interesting.
I'm looking for a job.
And for an employment agency. This is a newspaper.
I know it's a newspaper, sir.
Congratulations, kid. It's very smart of you. Copy. Copy, boy.
Yeah?
Get this to composing. Right. You still here, Gringo?
Spingold, and I don't give up that easily, Mr. Late. I want a job as a reporter.
Oh, you do? What have you ever done?
Nothing yet, Mr. Late.
Look, I'm a busy man. You want a job? Go out and get a reputation, then come back.
But, Mr. Late, how?
How do I know how? Go out and get it. If you got what it takes, you'll be back.
I'll be back, Mr. Lake.
Goodbye, Gringo.
The name is Spingold, Mr. Lake. Spingold. And I wish you'd remember it.
All right, I'll remember it.
Because I'll be back.
Spingold, huh? Yeah. I guess you will.
Nate could never explain even to me why he wanted to be a reporter then, but he wanted to be one deeply, and he roamed the streets of Chicago looking for a story that would bring him a reputation and a job. Nate's interview with John D. Rockefeller Sr., a national scoop, not only won him a job on the Chicago Examiner, but it won him more than that. It won him the experience of seeing life at many levels, the life of the wealthy and of the poor, the life of the downtrodden and the striving. And from his experiences, he gained insight in the beginnings of a philosophy which would be his message to the world. For he was a sensitive man, sensitive to men's hopes and dreams, as much as to the defeats which circumstance could inflict. And even in those days, as a youngster, he had a special capacity for being liked by all kinds of people. Among them, a man named William Morris, who operated a chain of vaudeville theaters throughout the country.
Spingold, I've read the story you've written about me. Very good. Most reporters ask me what I'm doing. I think you're the first one who ever asked me why I do what I do.
Well, that's what interests me, Mr. Morris.
What interests me, Spingold, is you. How would you like to come to New York to work for me?
In show business? I'd like it. What would you pay me?
How about 75 a week? I think that's fair.
I'm not sure it is, Mr. Morris.
Well, I can't very well pay more.
Well, I'm not asking you to. But I still don't think it's fair. All I earn now is 35.
Spingold, you're worth twice what you get now for your honesty alone. Come to New York. You won't regret it.
He was 23 when he came to New York, and there were many reasons he used to tell me why he never regretted the move. Among them, a young woman to whom he was introduced by one of William Morris's clients on his first day in the big city. Her name was Frances Leviton. She was only 19 years old, but she had already begun to establish a reputation as a hat designer, principally for the theater. The little shop she ran in the lobby of the Old Palace Theater was known as Madame Frances. And I was rarely called anything else. Hello?
May I speak to Frances, please?
This is Madame Frances speaking.
Madame Frances? It should be Mademoiselle, at least, shouldn't it?
I beg your pardon.
Hi.
Who is this?
It's Nate Spingold, Frances.
Oh, yes, Mr. Spingold.
I'm sending a boy over with tickets for a box for Cliff Gordon's opening tonight.
Mr. Spingold, I told you at lunch I didn't want them.
I'm sending them anyway.
It happens that Cliff Gordon himself has invited me to the opening.
Oh, then you'll be there. I really don't care who's invited you, Frances. I'll see you at the theater. Mm-hmm.
For 19 evenings in a row, Nate Spingold escorted me to the theater, to Rector's, to the chic and elegant restaurants and concert halls of the New York of 1909. And on the 19th evening, we walked hand in hand through Central Park. Nate? You're very quiet tonight.
I know, Francis. I'm leaving New York tomorrow.
Leaving? Where are you going?
To Europe, with Mr. Morris. Francis, I'll be gone a long while. I wish you'd say you'd marry me.
Well, Nate, I've grown very fond of you, but we've known each other such a short time.
It seems to me I can't remember when I didn't know you.
Why are you going to Europe?
Change of subject, Francis. Okay, to get a monkey.
A monkey? You're joking.
Not at all. Hammerstein's got a trained monkey at his theater. It's drawing crowds. Mr. Morris feels we have to find one to compete.
What an occupation for a grown man. Don't you feel silly off to Europe in search of a monkey?
It does sound foolish, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It's really very important.
Yes. For business, you mean?
No, I mean for the people who go to Mr. Morris's theater.
Important, Nate? A monkey?
It's not just a monkey. Any more than it's just an acrobatics act or a juggling act or a singer. Francis, why do you think people go to the theater?
But to enjoy themselves, of course.
I think it's more than that. I think they go there for strength.
For strength? To a vaudeville house?
To lighten the cares they carry, Francis. To be able to go ahead when things aren't breaking their way. I think everyone who lives is a hero, Francis. Everyone. I learned that in Chicago. That's why the theater's important.
I've known a lot of people in show business. I've never heard anyone say that kind of thing. It's the kind of thing I'd expect a lawyer to say, or maybe a doctor.
Well, that's funny. I wanted to be a doctor once.
You did?
Mm.
You would have made a fine doctor, too.
Fainted the first time I watched an operation.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. On the other hand, there's more than one way to keep people healthy and happy. And that, my dear, is why I'm off to Europe to find a trained and very important monkey.
We were married 6 months later, and from the beginning, it was a marriage to which both of us contributed, and in which both of us grew. We were young and in love, and we opened the doorways of our spirits each to the other, sharing each other's values, learning, growing, each from the other. One of the many doorways Nate opened for me was to beauty and love of art. There's hardly anyone in the museum today, Nate.
Hardly anyone, Francis. Why, this room is full of people. Look, Rembrandt, Botticelli, Da Vinci.
Darling, it's wonderful to look at paintings with you. You talk about the artists as if they were alive.
But they are. Can't you hear them?
I can see the paintings, Nate, and I think they're beautiful, but no, I wouldn't say I could hear the artists.
Then you're not really listening, darling. It's as if each one of them is talking to us, right? To us, to you and me.
And what are they saying, Nate?
I think they're saying, look, everyone, I found something that's true in the world. Something so beautiful, so right, that I can't keep it for myself.
Darling, you should have been a poet.
Now you're laughing at me.
That's not laughter, Nate. It's love.
You know, Francis, sometimes I think it's all part of the same thing, everything we do, working or loving each other or painting pictures or even writing newspaper stories. It's as if everyone in the world is reaching out to everyone else just like the painters, as if each person is looking for a way to tell other people, look, I found out something. Let me share it with you.
I see what you mean. Nate, you should share what you found out with the world.
How, Francis?
Well, you're so coherent, so deep feeling. You should write a book about the things you've been saying.
I'm not that talented.
Of course you are.
No, not really. I think I'd be satisfied if I could help find some of the ways for people to talk to each other. Darling, just a moment. I've got to find a guard.
A guard? For what?
There's a Botticelli up there on the wall that's hanging crooked.
But they'll straighten it when they see it, won't they?
Well, perhaps tomorrow. I'd rather get them to do it today. If I get the museum guard to straighten the picture on the wall, it's almost... almost as if I'm helping Botticelli say what he wants to say.
It wasn't only Botticelli whom Nate joined in self-expression in those early years of our marriage. It was through him that I got my first opportunity to design costumes for the theater. I had a flair in creativity, he said, and he encouraged it. He told me very shortly the playbills of the most important theatrical productions would carry credits as familiar to theatergoers as the lights of Broadway. Gowns by Madame Francis. It was on an evening in 1915 that I came to an important decision. Nate?
Yes, Francis?
Nate, you're not listening.
But I am, darling.
Then why don't you put down your book?
I'm sorry. They're fascinating. These reproductions by a painter named Salviati.
I'm sure they are. But there's something serious I want to talk to you about.
More serious than Salviati?
Darling, don't you think there's anything more important than a painting by some old master?
Why, certainly. Another painting.
You're impossible.
So, you finally found that out?
Oh, please, darling. This is about the business. Nate, I want you to come into the business with me.
You're kidding.
I'm as serious as I've ever been in my life.
Darling, I am a press agent, not a dress designer.
I'll take care of the dressmaking, Nate.
Well, what would I do?
You'd run the business, promote it, and run it.
Francis, we're doing perfectly well now.
Nate, I know this can work. I just know it. If you'd just come in with me, we'll make a fortune.
Do we need a fortune, Francis?
No one needs one, darling, but... oh, you can do some lovely things when you have one. Maybe even buy a Salviati, Nate.
I'd love to own a Salviati, but I don't see myself in the dressmaking business.
What's wrong with the dressmaking business?
Nothing. It's just not for me.
Look, you once told me that even getting a trained monkey could make people happier. Don't you think making beautiful clothes can make them happier,
too? It's not the same thing.
Oh. Darling, let's put all the other arguments aside. Maybe you're right. What would you say, Nate, if I said only that I want to do this with all my heart, and I can't without you? I need you.
What would I say? I'd say, of course, darling, of course.
Thank you. We worked together for 13 years. It was in 1915 that the little shop in the lobby of the Palace Theater gave way to a small building on 47th Street, a purchase made possible only by the pawning of my engagement ring. By 1920, we were able to purchase and renovate a huge establishment on 56th Street, just off Fifth Avenue. And by 1927, Madame Francis counted in its clientele the most distinguished ladies of the theater, of high society, and the motion picture world. The combination of imaginative management and creative enterprise brought good fortune beyond our wildest dreams. Together, we had created a great institution in the world of fashion. Together, we had achieved success. But it was independently at the height of this success that Nate Spingold, with an extraordinary acumen, took the step that would allow us to go forward to new areas of service. It was 1927, 2 years before the crash.
Francis?
Yes, Nate?
Francis, I don't know if you're going to understand this or if you're going to like it, but I think it's wise in more ways than one. I've just sold the business.
We traveled abroad after the business was sold, adding paintings to our already very important collection. In Palm Beach, where we had built a home, and in New York, Nate studied, read, and lived art. I think he may have felt he had reached his goal in life, yet his greatest contribution was still to come. Nate, there's someone I want you to meet, name of Harry Cohn. He's in the picture business.
A collector?
I don't think I've heard of him.
No, darling. Not in the art field. It's a different kind of picture business. Motion pictures. They met Harry Cohn, the volatile president of Columbia Pictures, and Nate Spingold, the gentleman who would become his closest friend and advisor. Nate agreed to spend a month at Columbia Pictures. He stayed for 27 years. It was as if he had spent all of his life preparing for his role in the film business, the role of statesman, innovator, pioneer. He saw the motion picture screen as a giant painting on the wall, speaking not to a few, but to millions. And in 100 conferences, he was very quick to say so.
But, Harry, we've got to make this picture.
I don't think it can be done, eh?
It has to be done. There's a tenderness in this story, something to make people understand that even in the face of brutality, man can rise to new heights of spiritual understanding. It's a message we should help get across.
Nate, we're in the entertainment business, not the message business. We're Columbia, not Western Union. Were you interested in messages when you were with William Morris?
The world has changed since then, Harry. Maybe so have I.
Look, I've told you 1,000 times, we got to make pictures that people will go to see.
Right, but when they leave, Harry, they should take something more away with them than an empty popcorn bag.
Let them take away a happy feeling, isn't that enough?
I used to think so, Harry, no more. Look, we can reach millions of people. All over the world, we have a responsibility.
All right, I agree, but I don't see how we can make this picture.
Why not?
It takes a poke at the army, for one thing. There are parts of the story a lot of people wouldn't think decent.
Harry, just tell me we can make it. I'll figure out how.
Okay, Nate, you win again. But over my better judgment, Nate.
The picture was made. Its title... From Here to Eternity. In 1955, Nate underwent a major operation. For the following 2 years, I, who had been his companion of almost a half century, begrudged even a moment spent away from his bedside. We spent the greater part of our time in our home in Palm Beach, from which he continued to exert great influence on the motion picture industry. But his eyes were always on the future.
Francis, I want you to get Mike to fly down here as soon as possible.
But why Mike?
I want to change my will. Oh,
darling, you'll be changing your will for another 20 years.
Of course, Francis, of course. Will you call him tomorrow?
All right, darling. But I...
Francis, I want you to understand what I'm doing. I'm not leaving anything to you.
Darling, I don't need anything... But I don't want to hear these things.
I think you should. There's a reason.
All right, darling.
I've been thinking back, darling. You remember the day we went to the museum?
How could I ever forget?
A man who paints a great picture, he doesn't stop talking to the world. He goes right on long after he's gone. I want to do that, too. I'm leaving my entire half of our trust fund to help people understand each other, to people... Spread knowledge and beauty and wisdom.
Nate, darling, please don't exert yourself.
No, let me say it. I've been lying here, and I've realized something. Maybe we can't all be artists, but we can help to straighten the pictures on the wall.
Yes, I understand, darling.
We've done everything together, Francis, and when I'm gone...
Nate.
No, darling, listen. When I'm gone, I wish you'd use what you have to do something, the same thing?
I will. I promise, Nate. We'll do them together. When he left us, not quite 2 years ago, the leaders of the motion picture industry paid tribute to him as a pioneer, a colleague, and a friend. All three he was. It seems to me that all his life, that was Nate's mission, to make it possible for truth and beauty to reach into the hearts of men. All his life and even now, for by his deeds he is with us still, searching out the ways in which he and others may pass forward the eternal message of truth, of beauty, of man's hope, to all the world. And as my Nate would say,
the trick, the real trick, is finding the way to get your message to the world.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting from Washington, D.C., Mr. Eric Johnston, President of the Motion Picture Association of America. Mr. Johnston.
No man knew better than Nate Spiengold, whose life story we have just heard, the power, the sweep, the responsibility of the motion picture as a world communicator in our age of danger and of dazzling hope. For it is true, as he recognized so well, that the Hollywood motion picture is one of the revolutionary forces in the world today. It travels to almost every country on earth. It is seen by more than 250 million persons every week. It is seen in handsome movie palaces of big cities. It is seen in ramshackle buildings and dusty villages. It is seen on the makeshift outdoor screens at remote crossroads. Its pervasiveness makes it a source of education and enlightenment, as well as entertainment. Through the American motion picture, the landless farmer in Patagonia sees an Iowa farmer plowing his rich black field with a tractor. And he plows with hardly more than a stick dragged through the earth by a burro. A working man in Indonesia sees in our films an American worker leaving his Cape Cod cottage, driving to the factory in his own automobile. And he in Indonesia trudges for miles on foot to his work. A woman in North Africa sees an American housewife out on the farm. It's not a very prosperous farm, but it's electrically lighted and equipped with a washing machine and a sewing machine and a modern kitchen. The woman in North Africa has just washed her laundry in a nearby muddy stream. These people, all these millions of people, see this and something more in our Hollywood films. What they see is the essence of freedom itself, the man who speaks up to his boss, who gets ahead through his own efforts and energy, who governs his own destiny all the way from the town meeting hall to the halls of Congress. This is the vision, the role, that Nate Spiengold saw so clearly for the American motion picture. It was the role that he saw for himself in every aspect of his life.
Thank you, Mr. Johnston. Our Eternal Light drama today, Message to the World, was written by Mark Siegel and starred Joan Crawford and Franco Tone. Others in the cast were Carl Weber, Ralph Bell, Joseph Julian, Santos Ortega, and William Mason. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Be with us next week when the Eternal Light begins its 14-week summer series, Words We Live By, featuring literary dialogues between Mark Van Doren and Maurice Samuel on the Psalms as great human documents. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This pre-recorded program has been an NBC Public Affairs presentation.
This is the NBC Radio Network.